All right, this is our outline of the book of Genesis as we tweaked it a little bit last time, dealing with this last section where chapters 12 to 37 is God building a nation, and then from our chapter 36 actually, and then 37 through the end of the book, God preserving a nation. We're in that section of God preserving a nation. That's where we are. Now, as we did last time, we're only going to review certain chapters, different ones from last time. Chapter 3 of Genesis is something major happens in Genesis 3. Something bad, sin. Yeah, Adam and Eve sin. All right, chapter 12, notable chapter because it deals with promise to Abraham and the call. All right, chapter 19 deals with Sodom and Gomorrah, the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Chapter 21. Yeah, somebody said birth of Isaac. Very good. Chapter 25. Yeah, Abraham dies and we have the birth of Jacob and Esau. All right, chapter 37, last time. All right, Joseph is sold into Egypt. That's a key point because we're going to come back to that here in just a little bit on a time frame. Chapter 38. Yeah, Judah and Tamar. And then chapter 39 was Joseph sold and to Potiphar, and he is tempted by Potiphar's wife. Now, we saw this last time, and I'm flagging this again for us to pay attention to. Watch for evidence of God's providence. We don't always know until we get to the end of a thing in the text. In our own lives, we don't always know, even when we get to the end. But nonetheless, we don't always know exactly what part of this is part of God's providence, but the overall picture we're going to see and have already seen is God working out His purpose. Sometimes He will use the free will decisions of man, even evil decisions, evil actions, to accomplish His goal, such as the brother selling Joseph and to the Ishmaelites, and then he's carried off to Egypt. That's God working out His plan to preserve His people. So the goal is for God to preserve a nation through whom the Messiah will come. Now, two references that we call attention to is Genesis 46:3. If you're not here last time, flag that one, where God told Jacob that I'm taking you there to Egypt to build a great nation out of you. And then chapter 50 and in verse 20, Joseph said, you told his brothers, you intended evil, but God meant that for good. Now we're about to embark upon some dreams. We saw dreams in chapter 37 where Joseph had two dreams. And then we're going to see the interpretation of two different dreams in chapter 40 and two dreams in 41. So let's talk about Joseph and dreams for a moment. Joseph had two divinely revealed dreams. Now, that's important because this was prophecy being made through these dreams. God is using Joseph as a tool of revelation. And so in chapter 37, we already noted, he had two divinely revealed dreams about himself and his brothers. He told it to his brothers, you remember, and that didn't go over too well. So they referred to him as the master of dreams. Here comes the dreamer. Look at your footnote in the New King James, and that literally means the master of dreams. Here's the guy who claims that he's the know-it-all on dreams. Well, he was the know-it-all on dreams. He was the master of dreams. So tonight we're going to see in chapter 40, the baker and the butler each have a dream. Joseph interprets that. Then Pharaoh has two dreams, which is basically the same dream in two different forms, and he interprets that. Now, I don't know the significance of the pattern of two and two and two, but that's an interesting pattern. He had two dreams, the butler and the baker had a dream each, and then Pharaoh had two dreams. Now, here's something else about the dreams. His dreams caused him misfortune at the hands of his brothers. So as he revealed the dream, here's what my dream was. And the interpretation was obvious to his brothers and to his father, and that caused him misfortune at the hand of his brothers. That just created more jealousy. But also his dreams caused him to be promoted at the hand of Pharaoh. And both were tools of God's providence. That makes sense? So God used the misfortune. God used the rising or elevating at the hand of Pharaoh. His interpretations of dreams led him finally to be remembered before Pharaoh. Now, there was a delay there, and that's a significant delay that we'll talk about when we get to the end of chapter 40 in just a moment. And it eventually led to his release from prison. So God's using these dreams for a purpose. It's not just, oh, by the way, I had an interesting dream, and I don't know what all this means. We may do that. We may have a dream and you reveal it and it doesn't mean anything except you just had a crazy dream. That's all it means. But God's using these dreams to accomplish his purpose. Is that making sense? So Joseph is indeed the master of dreams. So let's go to chapter 40. Let's get a couple of questions out of the way here. Question number two, what was the butler's dream? All right, he saw a vine with three branches, and he took some of the grapes and put it in Pharaoh's cup and gave it to him. And so, what does that mean? He's going to be back serving Pharaoh. All right, question number three, what was the baker's dream? All right, he's not going to be served, he's going to be hanged. And so that's exactly what happened. So let's work through chapter 40 now. Here's what happens in chapter 40. Pharaoh's butler and baker are put into prison and they had dreams. Exactly what they did, we're not told. I take it that the baker that's mentioned here must have done something more severe than the butler did. And that's a matter of conjecture because of the end result of the two men. We'll get to that a little bit later. But let's start there at verses 1 to 3. It came to pass that after these things that the butler and the baker offended their lord the king, and Pharaoh was angry with them, and he, the text says that he cast them into the custody of the captain of the guard in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined. Now what's interesting is that not only was Joseph there, but what did we see at the end of chapter 39? Joseph was confined there. Yeah, the chief guard saw that God was with him, and it was obvious God was blessing Joseph, and so they put all the prisoners under his care. And so the butler and the baker are going to be under his care, according to verses 1 to 4. So he charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they were in custody for a while. Now let's stop and talk about time for just a moment. Joseph was 17 years old. We're going to give evidence of this a little bit later. Joseph was 17 years old at the time that he was taken by his brothers, chapter 37 in verse 1 and 2. And we're going to see here in our text as it flows through in chapter 41 that he's 30 years old when he finally comes out of prison. And some 2 years had passed after this event of chapter 40. So that tells us that he would have been about 28 years old at this event. So whatever that's worth to you, I don't know, you might want win a Bible trivia question and our game somehow with that bit of trivia. But he was about 28 years old, and I'll give you evidence how we deduced all that on a chart here in just a moment. But what that means is if he's 28 years old and he's 17 when his brothers took him, it's been 11 years since the events of chapter 37. Now, how that 11 years is divided up, we don't know. That's what I was driving at, is how much of that was spent in Potiphar's household and how much of that was in prison. The 2 years mentioned later in chapter 41 is only 2 years with reference to since the events of the butler and the baker and Pharaoh's dream. That's all it tells us. So he was there longer than the 2 years. How much longer? I don't know. Some time had passed. So how do you divide up the 11 years? How much of that was in the prison? How much of that was in Potiphar's house before he went to prison? I don't know of anyone who knows how to divide that for what that may be worth to you. So beginning now at verse 5, they both had a dream. And in verse 6, Joseph came into them and he noticed they were sad. The English Standard says that they were troubled. The New Century says they were worried. In other words, they're bothered by the dream. What does this mean? Each one of them are talking about they're having a dream. We've had a dream, each one of us, and we don't know what that means. Now, verse 8 is a key verse, and we're going to flag it a little bit later in chapter 41, that when they had dreamed a dream, they said, they told Joseph, this is why we said, we've dreamed a dream, there's no interpreter. And Joseph said, do not interpretations belong to God? Now, one of the things that I'm learning from verse 48 is Joseph is God's instrument of revelation in having the dreams of chapter 37 and interpreting the dreams of chapter 40 and interpreting the dreams of chapter 41. Does that make sense? And we'll flag that point again at verse 8, but you just might flag a note or star verse 41. Joseph is God's instrument of revelation here. All right, now, let's talk about the chief butler. He had a dream, and we've already talked about it. He saw a vine, and it had three branches. The three is significant. And he took the grapes from there and pressed it and put it in the Pharaoh's cup. And so Joseph gave the interpretation, said what that means. The 3 branches are 3 days, and in 3 days you're going to be restored. Now, verse 14 and 15, flag that for a moment. What do you see in 14 and 15? Yeah, let's just pretend you haven't read further. You don't know how this story turns out. You would assume that the chief butler is going to be serving again, and he hears from a man of God, and it comes true just like he said, that he definitely would remember. You would think that's what's going to happen. That's what I'm expecting to happen, pretending I haven't read further. So look at verse 14. He said, please remember and show kindness to me and make mention of me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. Later it's called a dungeon or a pit in chapter 41. For indeed I was stolen. New American Standard said I was kidnapped out of my land of the Hebrews. And I have done nothing that I should be in this dungeon. So here I am in this pit, this dungeon. I'm in this prison. Please remember me. He begged of him, please remember me. We'll say something more about that in a moment. Now then, the baker's dream is very similar to that. And as we've already mentioned, in answer to question number 2 or 3, he saw the 3 white baskets on his head, all kinds of goods, and the birds came and ate of that. And Joseph gave his interpretation that what that means is within 3 days, your head will be taken off. And you'll be hanged in the trees and the birds will eat your flesh. Now what's interesting to me is the baker came in and look at verse 16. He saw that the interpretation was good with the butler. And so he thought he was going to get one too. And so since that one went well, that interpretation, I'd like to hear what mine represents. Well, he's not so glad to hear that now. But verse 20 through 23, what happens? Last section of the chapter. It came true. Pharaoh has a birthday feast, and so he has everybody celebrating this great feast for all of his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and the chief baker. In other words, he brought them out of the dungeon and brought them out of the prison, and so he brings them, and he restores one, that is the butler, and then he hanged the chief baker just as Joseph had interpreted them. Now, what does that tell you before we get any further about Joseph? Yeah, his interpretation came from God. We've already made the point back at verse 8 that Joseph is God's instrument of revelation. So this interpretation came from God. In fact, Joseph said that. He said, do not interpretations belong to God? And so, yeah, I'll tell you what it means. Here's what it means. It came to pass just like it said. Now, I would assume at that point, if I hadn't read further, when the butler saw it came true just like Joseph said, he definitely would remember him before Pharaoh. Now, verse 23. What does it tell you? He did not remember Joseph, but he forgot him. Now, let's make a point from verse 23. Every time I go through this story, when I get to verse 23, I'm disappointed at that point. I try to read, as I just mentioned, pretending as if I haven't read ahead. And when I get to that point, I'm disappointed at the butler, aren't you? Here's a very powerful lesson. You might make a note on this. Timing means everything in providence. Timing means everything in providence. The delay of 2 years. You say, where'd you get the 2 years? We're about to get to that at verse 1 of chapter 41. The delay of 2 years may have worked far better than had he remembered immediately. Does that make sense? You see, what I was wanting him to do as I read through the story is rush out and tell Pharaoh, let me tell you before you do anything, restore me, I've got to tell you about this man in prison. How far do you think that may have gone with Pharaoh? Pharaoh has no reason to need to listen to Joseph. He has no reason he needs to respect Joseph. It's not until Pharaoh has a dream and can't figure it out and he's troubled that suddenly, oh, I forgot to tell about that. Let me tell you about this man. So again, this is a powerful point. That timing has everything to do with providence. The delay of 2 years, that's a long time. He's sitting in prison, rotting away for 2 years. The delay of 2 years may have worked far better than had he remembered immediately. Now let's get a practical lesson out of that. It may be that I'm praying for something and I'm disappointed at the delay, but the delay may work far better later than it would right now. Does that make sense? There may be things that I'm disappointed that so-and-so did this, and yet that may end up being a tool that God uses to accomplish something greater. Does that make sense? May not have been ready. Joseph may not have been ready. Pharaoh may not have been ready to accept it, accept him. God's working it out. And so God's going to use this delay. Does that mean God caused the butler to forget? I don't think so. He uses the forgetfulness of him to accomplish his purpose. All right. That's a powerful point, I think, that needs to be made. I learn more about providence the more I study the cases of providence scattered throughout the scriptures. All right. Let's go to chapter 41 now. Now, Pharaoh has dreams. And so now, verse 41, Pharaoh has two dreams, verses 1 to 8. We'll get to what that, but I want to flag at verse 1 at the end of two full years. Those 2 years are going to help us with some timing. So 2 years have passed since he interpreted these dreams. The butler is out doing his duty and serving and has forgot all about Joseph. No, he hadn't forgot all about him. He forgot to remind Pharaoh about him. Two full years had passed. All right. So Pharaoh goes to sleep one night and he has a dream. What's his first dream? All right. The first one had to do with seven fine-looking fat cows feeding in the meadow. And then there were seven other cows who came up and they were ugly, gaunt, and they stood by the river. And the ugly, gaunt cows did what? They ate the fat cows. But when they got through, you couldn't tell it, could you? In other words, they didn't explode up and become big, which you'd expect. And so he awoke. Verse 5, he fell asleep again and he dreamed a second dream. What was this dream? All right, very good. He had seven heads of grain, verse 5, that were they're plump and good, and then seven heads that were blighted and the east wind had sprung up after them, and the seven thin heads devoured the seven plump heads, and he awoke, and it was a dream. Now, he was troubled by that, and he went to his magicians and his wise men. This is going to remind us a little bit later of some cases in the book of Exodus, and they couldn't figure out what's going on. So now verse 9, the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh, and what did he say? Starting at verse 9. I remember my offenses this day. I like the New Century rendering of that. He said, I remember something I promised to do, but I forgot about it. Well, yeah, you think? In other words, it comes to me now when you're talking about this interpretation of dream. I remember this guy in prison. And let me tell you about this guy in prison. What did he tell him about him? Yeah, he said he's a young Hebrew, and each of us, do you remember, and I'm going to paraphrase, do you remember when the baker and I offended you and you put us in prison and we were there and here was the two dreams we had and there was this Hebrew, young Hebrew there. He interpreted those for us and it came true just according to his, as he had said, just exactly like that. And he was restored, I was restored and you hung the other guy and just like the interpretation said. Let me tell you about this guy. All right, now let's start at verse 14. This gets interesting at verse 14 to 24. Pharaoh called for Joseph and told him his dreams. But look at verse 14. He brought him hastily out of the dungeon. Now, we've already mentioned dungeon. What's interesting, that's the same word that's used in chapter 37 for the pit that Joseph was put in. Is that a play on words? Maybe. Some suggest maybe that's a play on words, that he was cast into the pit by his brothers. He's lifted out of the pit by Pharaoh. Make sense? Maybe. I'll leave that for you to decide. He shaved himself and changed his clothes, went in before Pharaoh, and so Pharaoh tells him the problem. Now look at verse 16. He said, I've dreamed and no one can interpret it. Look at verse 16. You might make a marginal note to see 40 in verse 8, because over at 40 in verse 8, if you made a note, Joseph is God's instrument of revelation. Remember that? All right, we're flagging that again. He says to Joseph, it is not me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Now, you've been told I'm an interpreter of dreams. Well, I can do that, but it's God telling me that. I am the instrument of God's revelation. Making sense? All right, so he told him the dream, and we won't go through all the dream. Here's what happened with the cows, and here's what happened with the heads of grain. And when he got through with that, starting out at verse 25, Joseph interprets the dream. There are three verses we want to flag at verse 25, 28, and 32. I'll give you those again in a second, where Joseph says, this is what God has told you. So what that tells me is, verse 25, 28, and 32. We're going to look at each one of those. That this was a divinely induced dream, or dreams, plural. Make sense? It's not that Pharaoh had a dream, he ate too much sweet stuff, and he got to dreaming one night, and it was just a wild, crazy dream, but this was a divinely induced dream. How do I know that? 25. The dreams of Pharaoh are one. Those two dreams mean the same thing. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. God's telling you something. All right? And so he goes back and relates with reference to the cows. And we'll talk about what that means in a moment. But verse 28. This is the thing that is spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh what he's about to do. Third time, look at verse 32. And the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice. In other words, why didn't he just give him one dream? Because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. He told him three times, this is God's revealing a message to you. It's about to take place. It's about to take place soon. All right, what did the dream mean? I'm calling it dream singular because Joseph said your dream, two dreams are one, meaning the same thing. So what's the point of the dream? Yes, there's going to be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. So here's the fat cows, the plenty, and the gaunt cows represent the famine. And the same thing with the heads of grain. He said, that's what it's going to be. So here's my advice to you. I call it advice because verse 37 calls it advice. What was his advice? This is Joseph advising, this is a prisoner, by the way, telling the king, talking about speaking truth to power. He's advising the king, here's what I would do. What's his advice? All right. Yeah, he said, You need to pick a wise man. He wasn't saying pick me. And I take that this advice was divinely given by Joseph. In other words, Joseph is again God's tool of revelation. That God is telling Pharaoh through Joseph, this is what you need to do. Get you a wise person that you can trust, that you put over, and during those years of plenty, set aside a fifth, and you accumulate so much so that we have plenty for the next years, not only for us, but to sell to other nations. And there will be a reserve, verse 36. And do you see that the hand of God's providence here, of God preserving his people? He's got to bring his people. His people are going to come down to Egypt. But what brought them there? By having plenty down in Egypt. And so the famine caused them to come. But if there was just as bad a famine with nothing, no reserve, there's no need to go to Egypt. God's using his natural means, working out his plan, working out his promise. All right, start at verse 37 now. Joseph is promoted to second in command. Let's expand that a little bit. So the advice seemed good to Pharaoh, and so did his servants. And Pharaoh turned to the others, the servants there, and basically said, can you think of anybody any wiser, any more qualified than Joseph? And what was the reason he gave for that? Look, verse 38. The Spirit of God is in him. That's evident in his interpretation. And then he said to Joseph, inasmuch as God has shown you all these things, there is no one more discerning it and wise than you. So, in other words, I'm going to set you over all the house. I'm going to put you in high command. I will set you over the land of Egypt, verse 41. So, what did he do? Verse 42. Basically kind of swore him in to high office, didn't he? Gave him all the signs and the symbols of power, such as gave him the signet ring, clothed him in fine garments, put a gold chain about him, gave him the second chariot. That's Air Force Two. He put him in the second beast, if you know what the beast is, for him to ride in. And in other words, you get this. I got the top one, that is Pharaoh is saying that, but you get the second one. And without your consent, no man can lift a foot or a hand in the land of Egypt. In other words, you're second in command. What else do you do, verse 45? Changed his name, Zaphnath-Paaneah, which means, we don't know for sure, this is Egyptian, probably it's Egyptian for, as the footnote suggests, God speaks and he lives. Well, it must have had something to do with the fact that Joseph could interpret the dreams. So God, I'm giving you a name. I take it that he's saying, I'm giving you a name that says God speaks through you and we're going to live. Had God not spoke through him, they might not have gathered in the 7 years of plenty. So God's going to speak. And so he gave him a wife, Asenath, and she was the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. And so Joseph went over all the land. Now, here's a verse you need to flag again, might underline, that he was how old? 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh. And so he began to gather. And how much did he gather, verse 49? So much that they quit counting. Yeah, they were keeping up, and finally they got such an abundance they stopped counting, and it was without number. Then Joseph has two sons. So what's happened here when they promoted him second in the land, he is promoted to this highest position. Basically, like in our country, he's vice president. He's second in command. And he's gathered all the food for the 7 years during the 7 years of plenty. He and his wife have two sons, and the first one was named. What does it mean? What does that name mean? Yeah, it's forgetfulness. Or the idea of making forgetful, because God made me forget the toil of all my father's house. In other words, all the troubles I had with my brothers. Then the second son's name was Ephraim, and it simply means fruitful, because God's made me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. So God took care of me. I had trouble at my father's house. They sent me off, they sold me, and I've gone to a foreign land, and God's made me fruitful, and here I'm sitting, second in command. And so, what happens now? Well, the people of Egypt and other countries come to Joseph to buy grain. So we see you had 7 years of plenty, and now after 7 years of plenty, the famine starts, and it fell over all the land, but there was bread in Egypt. So in other words, it took a little while before the famine hit Egypt hard. Does that make sense? It's hitting other countries first. Finally, there's a famine over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine became severe in the land of Egypt, and so all the countries came. And so we now have a cause for the people from Canaan to come, and that's what we're going to get into next. Questions or comments? I think Potiphar knew that. I think there's indication that Potiphar knew that indeed his wife was a lying woman.
I think it's interesting that Joseph has his children the year the famine comes. That's an awful lot of, I mean, Joseph knew 7 years, and then there's this famine, and yet he has children. That's an awful trust in God.
Yeah.
To have children that know there's a famine.
It's going to be okay. Yeah, if you knew we're about to have 7 years of famine, and you don't think God's going to take care of you, that's not a time to have kids. All right, let's go to 42 now. We've got to get through 42 and 43, so if we see if we can do that. Joseph's brothers go to Egypt now, and they return without Simeon. So when Jacob saw there was grain in Egypt, in other words, he got word, they've got plenty over there in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" In other words, it's time for action. In other words, I gather that things are getting thinner and thinner in the food supply in Canaan, around Hebron, where they are. And the brothers are just kind of standing around looking at one another like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And so their daddy says, why keep looking at one another? Let's do something. You go off to the land of Egypt. Now, we'll come back to verses 1 to 5. Just a little trivia here. They are in the land of Canaan up here at Hebron and have got to make a journey all the way to Ramses over here in Egypt. That's 200 to 300 miles. According to Lagos, which you can only measure in a straight line on Lagos, from Hebron to Ramses is 200 miles. So by the time you add some of the curves, let's add another 100 miles just for kicks. And some have suggested probably a 2 to 3 week or longer, maybe a month trip. So let's be generous and say it took them a month. It takes them a month to get down there to get their grain, and then it takes them a month to get back. There's 2 months, or at least 6 weeks of travel to get there and back. And they got to make 2 trips before we're through. Does that make sense? All right. So it's a little bit of a journey, a little bit of trouble for them. But he sends his 10 sons. And remember, there's 12 sons, so where are the other two? There's Joseph and Benjamin still at home. He was left back, according to verse 4. And so he sent them off to get their grain. Now, Joseph recognized his brothers, and he tested them. Before we work through that, let's put some time frame together. How long has it been since his brothers sold him? Been 22 years. And we base that on he was 17 according to chapter 37. You follow the math here. And you can correct me. You mathematicians can correct me if I'm wrong. But I think I'm right. He was 17 when he was sold. He was made ruler over Egypt at age 30, according to the passage we just flagged a moment ago at verse 46. Now that 30 minus the 17 means at that point it had been 13 years. And we're going to come back to that. Let's go back up here and add some information. I said we'd tell you how we got to this. The butler was restored 2 years before Pharaoh's dreams. That means he was 28 at the time he interpreted the dreams. Make sense? That's how we got that 28 years of age back in chapter 40. Now back to the storyline here. Joseph said after this, at the age 30, he said there's going to be 7 years of plenty. So we got to add 7. Now we've got to get ahead of ourselves to chapter 45 and verse 6. When Jacob finally comes, the famine has been going 2 years. Is that two complete years or partial years? We don't know. So 7 plus 2 is 9, and you got to add the 9 to the 13 we already had. That comes up with 22 years, approximately. Some say 20, some say 21, some say 22. But it's depending on whether or not those 2 years are two full years. Make sense? So my point here is, Joseph, last time they saw him, was 17. You think of seeing a 17-year-old, and he's 39 the next time you see him, you probably will not recognize him. Yes, ma'am.
When he was thrown in that pit, he was a kid.
Right.
And no doubt he was wearing that coat that he loves, but still what you would wear out as a shepherd. Now he's the seventh in command in Egypt. That'd be like taking a whole person that you're moving in the Church of the United States.
Yeah. He's going to look a lot different. Yes. His brothers were older, which made it easier for him to recognize. That makes sense. So some have raised the question, how did he recognize them, but they not recognize him? Because he's going to change more than they would have because they're older. So somebody that's 30 years old and you don't see them for 22 years, you may come near recognizing them than you will that 17-year-old after 22 years. Making sense? Likely. There's some conjecture there I recognize. All right. Yes. Right, right. Now let's look at chapter 42, verse 6 now. Joseph was governor of the land and sold to the people of the land, and Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him, their faces to the earth. Now you stop and think about that. And Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them. Now stop and footnote. We have no record or evidence that God had revealed to Joseph they would be coming. I hadn't thought about that till this study. Maybe God did, but we have no record of it. And I'm going to go with the fact we have no record. We have no evidence that God had warned him they were coming. Perhaps this is as much a surprise to Joseph as it was to his brothers. One writer said this is maybe just as much a test of Joseph and his faith as it was his brothers. Maybe. I'll leave you to decide that. So he asked him, where did you come from? And Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. And we've given reason why that would not perhaps be the case. And he remembered the dreams which he had dreamed. Well, obviously so, because they're bowing down before him. And he had told them that. I would have been tempted if I were Joseph. Hey, by the way, you remember your brother telling you about a dream? Well, he doesn't do that. Now look at verse 9. He remembered the dreams and he says, you are spies. Now, some make a play again on words. I don't know that the play on words are always there in the text, but they may be. That he may be making a play on words here because that's basically what they thought he was doing for them because he went out and looked about his brothers and gave a bad report to the father. Remember that? Chapter 37, verse 2. And he said, you are spies and you came to see the nakedness of the land. Well, the nakedness of the land is not a term we use that we wouldn't say, you know, Russia's got some spies or China's got some spies over here, and I think they're looking for the nakedness of the land. If you heard that on the news, you'd say, I'm not sure what they're talking about. It has to do with the vulnerable part. The New American Standard translates that the undefended parts of the land. There are certain areas of the land that's more protected and defended than others. And your spies looking out for the unprotected area that you're seeking to invade. Now, he recognized his brothers. He didn't really think that, but he's going to have a reason to hold them, and that's what he's after. And so verse 7 says, he spoke roughly to them. A lot of discussion about what that means. What does it mean he spoke roughly to them? Well, I think the roughly, and commentators go everywhere speculating what he must have said. So what does it mean he spoke roughly to him? I think the context, verses 9 to 14, shows what it was. In other words, he accused him of being spies and said, you come to see the nakedness of the land, and they denied that. And to quickly get through with this chapter, and we're not going to get through with chapter 43, obviously, but he said, I want to send one of you back to go get, to take food and go back and get your other brother as a test, if you're telling the truth and you're honest. And then he put him in prison for 3 days. Now, what was the purpose of the 3 days? Perhaps the 3 days was to give him time to decide what he was going to do and how he's going to handle this, because after the 3 days, he has a different plan. How'd the plan change? Instead of sending one back, we're going to keep one and send the rest of you back. Number of reasons may be to carry enough grain back for his dad and for the others in the family, etc., for all the tribes. Maybe a number of reasons. But notice at verse 18, do this and live, for I fear God. Now that seems strange to throw in the fear of God right here. Do this, what I'm about to tell you, and you will live and you will not die if you'll do what I tell you, for I fear God. Now, what does that have to do? It has to do, I think, with what he's just said is the fact that I fear God is the reason I'm not killing you. The reason I fear God is the reason that I'm not mistreating you. My fear of God is the reason I'm trying to preserve you and your family, and rather than retaliate. Make sense? He's second in command. He could have taken their heads off if he wanted to, but he didn't do that. Why? I fear God. Now drop down to verse 21. When they then leave, what'd they say? Verse 21. Yeah, we're being punished for that. With anguish of soul, he pleaded with us. Tells me they were callous. And it took a while for them to finally reach this point, didn't it? And so, he kept Simeon back. Look at verse 24. He turned away and wept. And then when he came back, he talked with them and he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. Why Simeon? I don't know. Some speculate he may have been the ringleader in the group back in chapter 37. He may have been, I don't know. But maybe that's why he kept him, that I'll keep him here. He's the ringleader. Or it may have been that he thought this is one of the brothers they all care about, and they'll come back for him. Maybe that's it. But he had a motive in keeping him versus the others. Now then, let's see if we can finish 42. I'm not going to make my goal of getting through 43. The brothers return to the father, and what two things happen right here. On their way back, they stop to get some grain out, and one of them found his money, and what was the reaction? His heart sank. It fell. And what is this that God has done to us? In other words, they've already thought we're being punished, and perhaps this is a trap. We're going to be trapped and accused of stealing or whatever. And then so they went and told Jacob, and Jacob wasn't all excited about the fact that they got their money back, was he? They then emptied their sacks, verse 41, and every man had money back in his sack. And they told him, said, we're going to take Benjamin back. And he was refusing. But I want you to notice two people, and then we're going to have to close. Reuben said, kill my sons if I don't bring him back. I'll take responsibility. And then we'll get in 43. We'll have to get into that next time. Judah is the one. And isn't it interesting? These are the same two brothers that defended him back in chapter 37. Remember that? Same two brothers. And Judah said, I'll be responsible and hold me accountable forever if I don't bring him back. We're going to stop there. We'll have to squeeze in 43 next time, because we've got a couple of things we want to say about 43 at the end of the chapter.